7 minutes after 12 o'clock on a overcast afternoon, but I choose to see this in the best possible poetic light, as this is the investment in our future flowers. And so gratefully am I going to then welcome our, I like to think of you as our poet envoy. And you are Conrad Balliot. Conrad, welcome.
Thank you, Nikki. Good to be here.
We have a certain similarity in what we do. I'm all about words strung together, but with melody and, you know, verse, chorus. You are all about words strung together, but more in the spoken, the human spoken voice.
You know, the way a lot of people feel about song, what song does to them, it sticks in their memory, it sends shivers up and down their spine, it gets them in the pit of the stomach. That's the way I am with poetry. People ask me, do I memorize it? No, it just sticks there.
I can't even imagine. Were you always that way?
I think so.
Yeah. Conrad Balliot, of course, does Conrad's Corner weekday nights just before 8 o'clock here on WYSO. Professor Emeritus of poetry.
Theoretically, Emeritus Professor of English, but I taught poetry whenever I could.
Yeah, and so much of a passion for it and appreciation that you sort of filled a niche here on WYSO. Tell us, Conrad, I know that it's been, you're coming up on 20 years. It's just a little bit
just,
shy.
Just like you, right?
in radio in general. I'm almost 10 years at YSO.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so Ken, just for fun, tell us a little bit about what was going on and how you first came to YSO to share poetry.
Okay, well, I had taught poetry for 30 years at Wittenberg, which was long enough. And I mean, I didn't get tired of poetry, but I got tired of freshman English themes and grading exams and grading students.
Bless your heart.
But I really missed the opportunity to share it. And I knew that WYSO had varied programs. I had been listening to WYSO since I came to Springfield in 61. And I knew they didn't have any poetry. So I called up.
Why did you listen to WYSO? Was it what was it about this station? I mean, obviously, we're super cool. I mean, there's always been something different. But was there something that caught you?
Well, it's partly the same reason that people listen to it today. It's a good source of news. It's a great, there's great variety. Then there was also classical music.
They that's right.
Classical music every morning, and I like classical music, and I would listen most every day.
Yeah. So back in 1961, you first became a listener, and then some years go by, and there's a sort of recognition that there's no poetry on YSO.
Right, and I called up and found out who would I talk to, and they said I would talk to the program director, who was a woman then known as Ruth Dawson.
Ruth Dawson.
And she later became Ruth Yellowhawk.
A beloved person here who made it sort of a part of just how she moved through the Miami Valley to include and bring people. So she agreed that there was a dearth of poetry.
Not only that, she had done a poetry program when she was a volunteer here. But when she moved into a paid position, she got too busy to do it and couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So, and I set up an interview with her. It turned out she had a program for sort of taking care of older people. I was old even then. And she put me on a program with herself. She ran a variety program just to see if I could do it on the air. And I guess I did well enough, so she put me on the air first as a part of Alpha Rhythm Sunday evenings. And for a while, I had my own half-hour program. That was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And
providing every bit of the sound. Not, you know, we have music that's involved in screen.
Right.
Yeah.
And they actually gave, they had a series of seminars for new announcers, new people on the air, and I went through some of those and learned more about how to do radio.
Well, it all makes sense with the, you know, the love of the spoken word, and it almost seems that radio is, if there was any medium ever meant to enhance and spotlight poetry, it is radio. We're talking with Conrad Balliot, longtime presence on these airwaves, and so what? When? So that was 1983. Wow, those were such interesting times. And so you came on board to do poems. And, you know, you and I've just loved getting to know you and just learn more about you. And I used to think you were just grumpy all the time, but I have...
Well, there's that part of me, too. I am known as a curmudgeon.
That's so funny because I didn't... it took me a long time to realize that I actually love that particularly about you. And another something that we've... I just... You and I, like, are in the same business. We're just different sides of the same coin. I'm about music strung together, sung, and we have a great... you know, you'll call up and you go, hey, I think I'm going to do songs. I've got a poem here about asphalt.
Yes.
Can you, you know, and then I'll try to get it, or I'll have a theme and throw it to you. And it's actually, we have a great deal of fun together.
It amazes me. I could come in here at noon and tell you, well, we're going to do turtles this week. And in 15 minutes, you'll have a song about turtles.
I love it. I love it. Love it. As spring springs here across the Miami Valley, and, you know, the valedictorian in my high school class way back in Bloomington, Indiana, could speak Old English, could read Beowulf and all these things. And I was never not impressed by that. I just thought, he's got the intermediary between what we're using now and what was used so far ago. But you have this gift as well.
Yeah, well, back in my... in my educational days, I went to Lehigh for a master's degree, and the chairman of the department was a Chaucerian scholar. So we all had to take a year in Chaucer. And Chaucer's Canterbury Tales begin with the springtime.
And but did he require you to
everybody
speak
who went there,
in?
We had to learn Middle English, yes.
How do you learn that, and how different
is it
from English?
Have you learned Spanish or German or anything else? You study it.
I guess so.
It's pretty close to English, as you'll hear.
Now, do we have the pronunciations? Do we all feel certain or comfortable that these are the proper pronunciations?
Yes, there's enough evidence how people said words then by the rhymes they knew and by songs that they wrote and so on. I've asked you to read part of the, this is part of the beginning of the Canterbury Tales, the prologue to the Canterbury Tales.
And remind me the time frame on this again? When were these written and when were people speaking?
Chaucer lived 1340 to 1400. This would be the late 1300s.
Okay, so this is the opening of the Canterbury Tales.
Yes. And you're going to read it in modern English, and I'll read the section and we'll read it. Read it responsibly. Responsibly.
Responsibly. Here we go. When fair April with his showers sweet has pierced the drought of March to the root's feet and bathed each vein in liquid of such power, its strength creates the newly springing flower.
And Chaucer wrote, "When thar April with his sure sorta, the drought of March hath pierced to the rota, and bathed every vein in which liquor, of which virtue engendered is the flower."
When the west wind, too, with his sweet breath, has breathed new life in every copse and heath, into each tender shoot, and the young sun from Aries moves to Taurus on the run, and those small birds begin their melody, the ones who sleep all night with open eye, then nature stirs them up to such a pitch that folk all long to go on pilgrimage.
When that Zephyrus ek with his sweat a breath, in spirit hath in every halt and hath tender croppus, and the youngest son hath in the rom his halve course he runna, and smaller fools mocking melody that sleep in all the nicht with open ear, so pricketh them nature in her courageous, than longing folk to go on pilgrimages.
And wandering travellers tread new shores, strange strands, seek out far shrines renowned in many lands, and specially from every shire's end, of England to Canterbury they wend, the holy blessed martyr there to seek, who has brought health to them when they were sick.
And Palmer is for to seek and strongest to Fernahal was cool in sundry landes, and specially from every shearest end of England to Canterbury they wender, the holy blissful martyr for to seek that him hath holpen when that they were sick. Isn't that lovely?
Isn't that lovely?
Even if you don't understand at all why the melody is there, the words are there, and that's the way it is with song. It's melody and words.
And something engaging in a notion, and a little painting set, a setting made, invites you in. You don't hear a lot of Middle English in the world. And, of course, that means you're listening to 91.3 WYSO. We have a lot of fun. We both have a love of language. And
I want to do another spring poem, if I may. This goes back to my past, too. When I was an adolescent, I picked up the poems of A.E. Housman, the Shropshire lad. And he spoke to my heart. and I have quite a bit of it by heart. Aww. And this is a springtime poem. And you've noticed all the trees are in blossom now.
Oh, so beautiful. Yes, indeed.
Loveliest trees, loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough and stands about the woodland ride wearing white for Eastertide. Now, of my 70 years and 10, says Houseman, 20 will not come again, and take from 70 springs a score, it only leaves me 50 more. And since to look at things in bloom, 50 springs are little room, about the woodlands I will go to see the cherry hung with snow. As a matter of fact, 80 springs will not come again, but I still go around looking at the cherries in bloom.
We have Conrad Balliot live in the studio. His Conrad's Corner airs weeknights just before 8 o'clock here on 91.3 WYSO. And we were talking about which songs that we would do in association with this. And I was thinking of songs that mention poets in them and songs that I particularly love. And chief among those is this Bob Dylan tune that we're about to hear, Tangled Up in Blue. There's he mentions a 13th century poet. We'll find out a little bit more about that. But I have loved this song for so long, and I feel like I know it so well that it is my friend. It's family, this person. Walk this song, sit up at the table with me, I wouldn't even be surprised. You have learned, you have some things to teach me about this song.
Actually, I knew Bob Dylan. I mean, I know some of the popular ones, but I had never heard this song. And you played it for me once, and you gave me a copy. And when I started looking at it and working through it, it triggered the professorial response.
Yeah.
I did some research on it. It's a fascinating, amazing piece of writing.
And it starts, we want to play just the first verse, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the song, and then we'll listen to it in its entirety. But you have taught me that this song is a sonnet, and can you just briefly give the textbook professorial definition of sonnet?
Well, a sonnet is a 14-line poem, and it has different forms. There's a Petrarchan sonnet, a Shakespearean sonnet. There are many varieties today of other kinds of sonnets, but basically it's a 14-line poem.
So here's one of my all-time favorite songs, which I only now, all these years later, have learned, is a sonnet. Stay tuned.
Early one morning the sun was shining, I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd changed it all, if her hair was still red. Her folks, they said our lives together sure was gonna be rough. They never did like mama's homemade dress, papa's bank book wasn't big enough. And I was standing on the side of the road, rain falling on my shoes, heading out for the East Coast. Lord knows I paid some dues getting through, tangled up in blue.
And we'll come back to that and listen to it, but that sets the tone. They all follow that pattern from that. It's a sonnet, Bob Dylan's sonnet, Tangled Up in Blue.
Right, and in the copy you gave me, there are 7 stanzas, and every stanza has 14 lines. And there are rhymes in there, sonnets. Shakespearean sonnet, he refers to Petrarch. He refers to a 13th century Italian poet. And actually, Petrarch was the 14th century, but Dylan isn't exact on the day.
He took poetic license.
He's all over the place, actually. He's sung the song in different times and places. He's sung it differently. People have asked him who the poet was.
But he makes reference to, because he doesn't say the name.
He said Plutarch at one point, which is a Greek poet, and he just got mixed up because it's quite clearly he had Petrarch in mind.
That has always been one of the lines that stood out to me, that she handed him the book of poems written by an Italian poet from the 13th century, and every one of them words rang true and glowed like burning coal, poured off of every page like it was written in my soul from me to you. I felt that the first time I ever had, my body felt what he was saying. I was just like, wow. So thought that.
But from the professor's point of view, he also says, like burning coal, which is a simile. And that's one of the things poets do. They have these fancy devices, and he has those in there.
It's a pretty brilliant piece of work, isn't it?
It is. And take the lines, Shakespearean sonnet, every other line will rhyme. A, B, A, B, C, D, C, D, E, F, E, F, G, G.
Wow.
You look at the first stanza, it has bed and red, and then it goes enough and rough, and then it goes, shoes.
And
through,
yeah.
And it lines up then with through and blue. And there's a couplet at the end. The last two lines rhyme.
Is it common that, because he tags it out each time with tangled up in blue, is that a sonnet to repeat a single last line?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sonnet, Shakespeare's sonnets always end with the last two lines rhyming.
Yeah.
And in the last two lines of this song, something always rhymes with blue.
Isn't that something? And so, but also, that he does end every stanza with "tangled up in blue." With those, is that common that they would repeat through,
refrains
or sonnets? Just one.
It's usually sometimes there's a series of sonnets. They don't always have a refrain as he does.
Yeah,
but refrain is another part of the poem.
Yeah. Well, shall we have a listen through? Oh, you go ahead.
Well, yeah. He also uses metaphors. In fact, "tangled up in blue." What exactly is "tangled up in blue"?
Yeah. I don't know, but it
doesn't have a literal meaning, but it has a figurative meaning that comes out of it. And then he alludes to Petrarch. Allusion is a poetical technique as well. And it's just marvelous. Mm-hmm. And there's the rhythm that is an intense part of poetry, and there is emotion, which is also part of poetry.
The song just has it all.
Yes.
In case you're wondering, it's the lead track on the very excellent album from First Note to Final Sustain called Blood on the Tracks. And let's hear it in its entirety. It's Bob Dylan, Tangled Up in Blue. It's such a great pleasure to host Conrad Balliet today.
Early one morning, the sun was shining. I was laying in bed, wondering if she'd changed it all, if her hair was still red. Her folks, they said our lives together sure was gonna be rough. They never did like Mama's homemade dress, Papa's banquet wasn't big enough. And I was standing on the side of the road, rain falling on my shoes, heading out for the East Coast. Lord knows I paid some dues, getting through, tangled up in blue. She was married when we first met, soon to be divorced. I helped her out of a jam, I guess, but I used a little too much force. We drove that car as far as we could, abandoned it out west. Split up on the docks at night, both agreeing it was best. She turned around to look at me as I was walking away. I heard her say over my shoulder, working as a cook for a spell, but I never did like it all that much, and one day the axe just fell. So I drifted down to New Orleans, where I lucky with a be employed, working for a while on a fishing boat right outside of Delacroix. But all the while I was alone, the past was close behind. I seen a lot of women, but she never escaped my mind, and I just grew. Place and I stopped in for a beer. I just kept looking at the side of her face in the spotlight so clear. Later on, when the crowd thinned out, I was just about to do the same. She was standing there in back of my chair. I said, "Tell me, don't I know your name?" I muttered something underneath my breath. She studied the lines of my face. I must admit, felt a little uneasy when she bent down to tie the laces of my shoes. said, you look like a silent type. Then she opened up a book of poems and handed it to me, written by an Italian poet from the 13th century. In the air. Then he started into dealing with slaves, and something inside of him died. She had to sell everything she owned and froze up inside. And when it finally the bottom fell out, I became withdrawn. The only thing I knew how to do was to keep on keeping on like a bird that flew, trying to love you blue. To get to her somehow. All the people we used to know, they're an illusion to me now. Some are mathematicians, some are carpenters' wives. Don't know how it all got started, I don't know what they do with their lives. But me, I'm still on the road, heading for another joint. We always did feel the same, we just saw it from a different point.
I think I could love that song more, but having the had a little bit more light shown on it by Conrad Bally, I do.
Yes. And you know, you remind me of my students, Nikki.
Yeah.
They said they couldn't memorize poetry. They didn't like poetry. That's poetry. And you were sitting there, your mouth
singing
was
along.
Going, you know, every word of
that
song. Yeah.
I can memorize a sonnet. Who knew?
Yeah, and when I Googled this, it's amazing to get on the internet. There's a lot of dispute among listeners whether he had one woman or two women or seven women.
I've always thought it was one, but I like the idea it could be many.
And what it all means.
Yeah.
And as usual, it reminds me of a poem.
Hey!
There's a poem by a local poet, Myrna Stone. She's from Greenville, one of the Greenville poets. And she has a poem dedicated to the men I never slept with. Dylan is bragging about all his women or his woman, and it's a delightful poem.
Bragging about her chastity.
Yes, yeah. And this is, of course, a woman's voice. Forgive my belated expression of affection and my surprise at your presence at my first time with Tom, the man for whom you plied the way, who succeeds you still. Surely, in the decades since our last brief impositions, we've come to understand flesh is but an implement for the organ that in delight and in dread gives and withholds. Yet never doubt that I desired you, in a theater in Boulder, and a booth at Jolin's, in rooms in Ada, and a barn near Minster. You remain perpetually able to stir me, dear Jeffrey, dear Vanny and James, dear Jerry B. and Jerry P., forgive me if I cannot in all conscience call ours love stories. Yes, my heart's a stone that ever sinks and rises, but be assured you taught me first the nature of the body's ambition. It is for that reason that I write.
That's kind of delightful.
Yes, the ones you missed.
And what's the poet's name again?
Myrna Stone.
Myrna Stone. We're talking with Conrad Balliot. We've We've moved through spring and desire and sonnets and the beautiful commonality of song and lyric. And we talked about it briefly. And you weren't familiar with the Schoolhouse Rock series, were
no.
you? It was in the 70s, must have been early 70s. Bob Drew and a huge cast of talented folk. Bob recognized that his children couldn't memorize math tape, you know, the multiplication, but they could jump right in on that refrain for the Stones song or whatever.
Right.
And so he set so many of these things. And from that, we got Conjunction Junction and I'm Only a Bill. And I know the preamble of the Constitution because of these Saturday morning Schoolhouse Rock. So there's something about music that adds a dimension that is more graspable. And I will tell you that although I would have said I wouldn't be able to memorize a sonnet, it's because there's something about poetry that I think intimidating, where there's something about music which always invites. And I wonder, I don't feel that you have one iota of intimidation about poetry. You're invited every time.
I'm glad. Actually, one of the most popular courses I taught at Wittenberg was called Beowulf to Beatles, in which we used a book that had a lot of rock music, including Dylan and the Beatles. And the lyrics are poems. And one of the most popular was the Beatles' Eleanor Rigby.
Which is a short song.
And it's a song about loneliness.
Shall we play it?
Yes, let's hear it.
Yeah.
Ah, look at all the lonely people. Picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care, all the lonely people? Where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? In the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came, Father Mackenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong?
With cello and certain sort of, the music very nicely paired with those lyrics.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And that was in your Beowulf to Beatles?
Beowulf to Beatles.
Yeah, Beowulf
yes.
to Beatles.
And that was Eleanor Rigby. It's about loneliness. No, that wasn't.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Yes,
you
okay.
You couldn't hear it because we haven't got you properly headphoned over there.
Right, and yes. Can I have a poem about loneliness? This is 20th century when the form of poetry became somewhat looser. There's not as much rhyme. It's by Edwin Arlington Robinson. It's called Mr. Flood's Party. Old Eben Flood, climbing alone one night over the hill between the town below and the forsaken upland hermitage that held as much as he should ever know on earth again of home, paused warily. The road was his with not a native near, and Eben, having leisure, said aloud, for no man else in Tilbury Town to hear, "Well, Mr. Flood, we have the harvest moon again, and we may not have many more. The bird is on the wing, the poet says, and you and I have said it here before. Drink to the bird. He raised up to the light the jug that he had gone so far to fill, and answered huskily, "Well, Mr. Flood, since you propose it, I believe I will." Then, as a mother lays her sleeping child down tenderly, fearing it may awake, he set the jug down slowly at his feet with trembling care, knowing that most things break, and only when assured that on firm earth it stood, as the uncertain lives of men assuredly did not, he paced away, and with his hand extended, paused again.
"Well, Mr. Flood, we have not met like this in a long time, and many a change has come to both of us, I fear, since last it was we had a drop together. Welcome home."
Convivially returning with himself again, he raised the jug up to the light with an acquiescent quaver, said,
"Well, Mr. Flood, if you insist, I might. Only a very little, Mr. Flood, for auld lang syne. No more, sir, that will do."
So for the time apparently it did, and Eben evidently thought so too. For soon amid the silver loneliness of night he lifted up his voice and sang secure, with only two moons listening, until the whole harmonious landscape rang. "For auld lang syne." The weary throat gave out, the last word wavered, and the song being done, he raised again the jug regretfully and shook his head, and was again alone. There was not much that was ahead of him, and there was nothing in the town below, where strangers would have shut the many doors that many friends had opened long ago.
Very nice.
And very sad.
Very sad. But
it's sad to get old.
It's a paint. Well, it's the way that it happens. Yeah. How funny in there he references a song.
He does indeed.
So everything we do, the songs are referencing poems. Maybe these distinctions are not real.
You know, just for out of curiosity, there's the Granger's Index to Poetry that lists centuries of poems by title and first line. There are over 2,000 poems that have song in their title or first line.
Wow.
And I think when a poet speaks of a song, he's speaking of his poem often and of himself as singer. There's a lot of overlap.
What You Can't Learn on WYSO. It's a great treat to be joined in the studio this hour by our beloved poet conduit vessel of poetic knowledge and appreciation. He's Conrad Balliot, and it's just a real treat to be here. We also, when we were talking about this and setting up, I thought of the Leonard Cohen song, Hallelujah. That... because it's another of these sort of mixing where that in the lyric, he references the chord structure that's following along underneath. In the very first line, he talks about, I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't care for music much now, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. And as he's these words, the fourth, when you think of a musical scale, 1 through 8, he's talking about it goes like this, the fourth, that would be the fourth note, and the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. And that's happening with the music as he's singing these words. And I remember realizing that and very nearly being knocked down. And the whole song is just beautiful. And you agreed.
I agree, and yeah. It has the technical stuff just the way poetry has technical stuff. What I just read was iambic pentameter unrhymed. That is, there are 5 stresses in every line.
See how I get scared?
5 unstressed lines. But you don't get scared of fifths and sixths.
I don't.
And I don't understand that at all. When they say they're standing on stage and somebody says key of F and all of a sudden or key of B flat and everybody knows what to do. I wouldn't have the faintest idea what to do.
So what is the line from the thing that we always did feel the same way, we just see it from a different point of view?
Right.
Shall we hear a little bit of Hallelujah?
Go for it.
Here is it's a Leonard Cohen tune covered beautifully by many, but I have to say I fell in love with the late, great Jeff Buckley's version of this. And by the way, the recording is so beautiful. It starts with his breathing out, sort of just a minor. Is it a sigh or is it like a little gasp of anticipation, of joy? Or you tell me, but I love even further that it starts with the human voice, sort of the sound of a pause. Thank you.
Well, I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift. The baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Well, your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. And she tied you to her kitchen chair. And she broke your throne and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the hallelujah. I've seen this room and I've walked this floor. You know, I used to live alone before I knew you. And I've seen your flag on the marble arch. And love is not a victory march. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah. Remember when I moved in you, and the holy dove was moving too, and every breath we drew was hallelujah, hallelujah. Maybe there is a God above, but all I've ever learned from love was how to shoot somebody who outdrew you. And it's not a cry that you hear at night. It's not somebody who's seen the light. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah!
Jeff Buckley's version, beautiful version of the Leonard Cohen tone poem on 91.3 WYSO. It is a great pleasure to be in the studio this afternoon with our beloved poet conduit, Conrad Balliot. And by the way, part of what we meant to include in this is April is
National Poetry Month.
Every year.
And we're celebrating that fact.
And there's so as we just have wrapped up Easter, this contemplation on holiness and what is and isn't, that's you found particular meaning.
Yeah, that Cohen song has a lot of religious overtones. And one of my favorite poets is W.B. Yeats. I couldn't read poetry on and off for an hour or so without doing a Yeats. This is two songs from a play, and it has religious echoes, obviously.
Did you say songs?
As well. The title is Two Songs from a Play.
Okay.
And I didn't even pick up on it. In pity for man's darkening thought, he walked that room and issued thence in Galilean turbulence. The Babylonian starlight brought a fabulous formless darkness in. Odor of blood when Christ was slain made all Platonic tolerance vain, and vain all Doric discipline. Everything that man esteems endures a moment or a day. Love's pleasure drives his love away. The painter's brush consumes his dreams. The herald's cry, the soldier's tread, exhaust his glory and his might. Whatever flames upon the night, man's own resinous heart has fed. You know, the writing of poetry, the writing of music, often is a strain. It's often the result of pressure and strain and pain, and that's expressed in that. But that's the way it is. I mean, Leonard Cohen, Bob Dylan.
Yeah, and you wonder that how, and yet these often serve as touchstones of strength and comfort for people that are, and maybe that's exactly why. I used to be a songwriter before I finally just threw it in, decided that this amazing radio life is where my soul really was drawn.
Yeah.
I was so unhappy when I wrote songs, so unhappy. Just, you know, days and days I would spend in just the deepest darkness. And yet these songs, you find out that they're very meaningful in a positive way.
Yes, yeah. And it's been a lot of fun too. I think we could do something like this again, Nikki, on a smaller scale.
We have a notion, and I'm very much looking forward to it. On Wednesdays at about 20 to 1,
right,
we're going to do the little thing that we do where we find a common ground behind a theme and a little song.
Challenge and share each other in song and sonnet.
And what is the one corner, Conrad? Your show, again, weeknights just before 8 o'clock, Conrad's Corner. But people...
There's a poetry group I have, and somebody... It's called Conrad's Corner sometimes, and somebody came up with the idea of a game called Corner Conrad, coming up with a word for which I can't find a line of poetry. And that's the game I play with you. I come in with a theme for which you are challenged to find a song.
On that note, Conrad, I'm just a big fan. I'm just fond of you personally as well. Thanks so much for spending some time with us here today.
Thank you, Nikki, and thanks for listening.
I wanted to go out, Conrad, with one of the Schoolhouse Rocks, which is the very collection of sound, word, and fun that makes me be able to this day, recite the preamble to our Constitution. So here's a little Schoolhouse Rock. Listen Wednesdays at 12:40, that's 20 to 1 in the afternoon when Conrad and I will be cornering Conrad, and he'll be stumping the host, and together we'll get up to a little song and sonnet. Here it is from Schoolhouse Rock. Conrad, thank you so much again.
Thank you, Nikki.